For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Thomas, and welcome to my shit therapist. Today I'm going to be chatting with a very nice man whose name isn't Rob. I just want to warn you that in this episode we're going to talk about childhood sexual assault, gender dysphoria, and suicidal thoughts. If you're not feeling up to it today, just give this episode a miss and come back to it another time. Rob got in touch with me last year to tell me that listening to my audiobook with his 13-year-old son helped them both deal with the trauma of his son's sexual assault by an older boy 3 years ago. In particular, there's a bit in my book where I describe calling my parents when I would have panic attacks and my mam talking me down with this stream of comforting chit-chat about what she was cooking for dinner, or what birds were in the garden, or how my dad was painting the garage doors a lovely shade of aubergine. And when Rob's son had nightmares, he'd tell his dad, "Talk to me like the mummy from the book," which broke my heart into a million pieces. Rob's a single dad. He's had sole custody of his child since he was 3 years old. Rob himself was only 24 at the time. He found out about his son's sexual assault through his school. He told a couple of friends who then told their teacher. And I invited him to talk to me about how they both coped with this incredibly dark period in both of their lives. And while he does share some extremely painful experiences with me and with us, what I'm really struck by more than anything is not only the bright, shining, unconditional love and support that Rob shows his son, but how clearly and fearlessly they both communicate with each other about their feelings and their needs, and not just about this very, very frightening and traumatic event. The son came out to his dad when he was only 11, and he's also questioning his gender identity. His pronouns are still he and him, I checked. When we begin, we talk about Rob's own experience with burnout and how he talked to his son about it. Yeah. Are you good at protecting your space?
Absolutely. I 5 years ago, I hit a mental wall. So I was on sick leave for 3 months, and I got diabetes type 2 and elevated blood pressure at the same time.
Nice to have the full set.
Absolutely. So the year I turned 30, everything just fell apart. So my body said, enough's enough, and my brain said, enough's enough. So 3 months off, I spent all my time here, clearing wood, chopping wood, building stuff, everything else. That was magical.
So your son would have been 9 at the time. Did you speak to him about it?
Yeah, I explained that dad is really tired. He can't sleep. He can sleep, but it's mostly during the day. I'm not sure what's happening, but something is happening. It's not good. And then I went to the doctors and got diagnosed with diabetes and elevated blood pressure, and I explained that to him. Is that dad has issues with his body. He's starting on medication, so hopefully it'll get better. But it will take time. So you just need to have some patience. But if you feel that things are going out of hand, please let me know. That was how we spoke to him about it, so that he was aware that I was not in the right place. so that he could be more mentally prepared that if, for example, like with diabetes, I started the medication, if I over-medicated, I would, I'm not sure what you call it in English when you have too low a blood sugar.
I think that's a hypoglycemic episode, but I'm not sure. Yeah. But basically, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. You start feeling drunk, you babble on, you nothing makes sense.
Mm.
So I tried to explain to him that if Dad looks like he's falling over, not making sense anything, just shove a Snickers in his mouth and then he'll be okay.
Okay, good.
Which is true. If you're super low blood sugar, shove a Snickers in your mouth and then you're okay.
And even if you're not, you know, hypoglycemic, it's never a bad time to be force-fed chocolate, right?
No, force feeding chocolate is a good thing either way, I think, yeah.
So you were in bed for a week. How long did it take you to start feeling better?
About a month and a half.
Mm.
Yeah, because for the first month and a half, it was just purely ignoring emails, ignoring phone calls, ignoring people, just being around the people that made me feel good, that pushed me in the right sort of way. So like, for example, my friends who slowly but gently pushed me out to like, join me for a coffee at my house, and then join me for a coffee outside, and then join me for a coffee out at a cafe. So they did it like step by step, instead of like, oh, fuck it, you should just join us.
Were you given any medication for your mental health?
No.
Or were you given any kind of treatment or a diagnosis? Did they say you seemed depressed? Was there any...
According to the diagnosis on paper, it's depression. My doctor at the time was a rather pragmatic and black and white kind of doctor. Like, either you worked or you didn't work. If you needed something else, you have to ask. Which kind of sucked when you were in that position where you didn't know what the fuck is happening with my body at all. So he didn't offer anything. The only thing I had was that after about 3 months, he started asking me how I was doing on a regular basis. Like, just very shallow therapy in that sense. Super shallow. But I was not given any, like, you need to see a psychiatrist or anything. He wanted to take the approach that we're first going to fix your body and see if that helps. If that doesn't help, then we'll have to deal with everything else. And thankfully, by being told that you have to slow down, you have to stop focusing on your work, you have to start focusing on everything else in your life, that helped. I kind of got out of that way down.
What's the best and worst mental health advice you've ever heard?
The worst is suck it up, which I got from my father. My dad is I love my dad, just be aware, but he's an asshole. But the best advice I ever got, since I haven't gone to proper deep therapy, but the best advice I have gotten is that you have to, it's so easy to say in Norwegian, it's not easy to say in English. You have to love your thoughts. Try to love your thoughts. Even if they're depressive, still love them and own them, that they're your thoughts. And then try to figure out from there.
So you've been a single, your son is 14 now, and you've been his sole carer since he was 3?
Yep. 10 years in May. Still counting every day and every hour, I think.
But you celebrated your 10-year anniversary with him, didn't you?
Absolutely. We went out to eat sushi. Which, yeah. Just because, number one, it's 10 years. A whole decade is a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So just, even though I know that both for me and for him, this has been 10 bumpy years, it's still worth celebrating that we have actually managed 10 years, even though it's bumpy as Yeah. Because it has been bumpy. And it will always be bumpy.
I could talk to Rob all day. We were on video call and he showed me around his home, a cabin next to a lake. Now we began to discuss the events of last summer, which began with the phone call that every parent dreads.
I got a phone call from school saying that I needed to come for a meeting because something, what was the word they used? Something that wasn't normal had happened. And then a couple of minutes later, Child Protective Services called me and said that you need to protect your son. And I was like, well, okay, what happened? Well, haven't you been told by school? Well, I've been told by school that something happened and then I should come home and we need to have a meeting as quickly as possible. Child Protective Services then said, well, that's not the way that we told the school to handle it. And we now have to tell you that this is way more serious. That's when they told me that, you know, my son had been molested by an older kid. I thought it had happened there and then, because of course my mind went blank. And then she tried to calm me down and say, well, no, he's okay. It's something that he told somebody, but we need to investigate this. We need to report it to the police. We need to ensure that we cover all the normal steps to ensure that he's okay. I work an hour away from where we live, so it took me an hour to get home. During that time, I had two phone calls with Child Protective Services and two phone calls with the police, because of course, this being a molestation, they wanted to press charges against the person that did it. We know who my son has said done it, but he will never be convicted because my son does not want to bear witness again to what he experienced about now 3 years ago, I think. Yeah, 3 years ago. I called my mom, told her to go pick my son up, bring him to their house, keep him there until I come. Try to tell her what I told, been told, but like the entire day still today is a thick haze because I don't remember everything that was told to me. I don't remember all the details. I don't think I want to remember right now either. Maybe in a couple of years I'll want to remember everything that I said so that it's possible that things can come up and be talked over. My son told me what happened after I kind of normal dad pressured him into telling me, but I cannot remember word by word what he said. All I can remember is that he said it was this kid and we were out playing, and then he forced me down on the ground and pulled down the pants and molested me. And then he started crying, which is absolutely understandable. And then I said, okay, when and if you want to give more details, we'll talk about the details, but we now have to figure out what to do. How to approach this, how we should actually deal with everything so that you are okay and that everybody around you are okay as well.
Rob talked about how he tried to find support for his son.
Getting him to try, not directly a therapist, but a male rape clinic in our hometown, which has some of the absolute best people I've ever met in regards to speaking. But that not working for him because he felt like he was done with it. He didn't feel like he needed to talk about it again, which we'll see in a couple of years if that is the right thing to do or if it's the wrong thing to do. But I don't feel like I have the... I don't feel it's right to make him talk if he doesn't want to talk.
This wasn't the family's first experience with trying to find mental health support.
Before this, we tried... before he ever told anybody, we were in touch with some child psychiatrists in my hometown. But we got a couple of really, really shit therapists that were more, they, number one, asked the same question every time we met. They asked him, for him, irrelevant questions. And number, and they also focused on the, not the correct things. They focused on him mapping out who his mother was instead of you should figure out who you are, which I find still to this day find kind of amusing that we came there because he had an identity crisis. This was before he ever told about me being molested.
So an identity crisis, what does that look like for a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old?
That was him. He was 11. That was him wondering, actually wondering if he was born into the wrong body. But he just says the wrong body, but I suspect it's the wrong gender.
Rob's son had had a conversation with the school nurse about the spectrum of gender. With no stable mother figure in his life, he gravitated towards her. And between lessons, they chatted about life, feelings, the inside and the outside, and what femininity and masculinity are.
So it was after the first session where they were talking about feminine versus masculine, he came home and started to talk about, do you think I am a girl? And I was like, no, biologically you're a boy. Yeah, but in my mind. In your mind, I'm not sure. You are sometimes a bit more feminine than other masculine boys, but that doesn't mean that you're a girl. That just means that you're more feminine. And everybody can be have their feminine side. But they continued talking about that during their sessions, you would call it. And then we agreed that we should contact the child psychiatric unit at our local place and actually have a discussion with a therapist about gender.
How do you support your child through something like that?
Just be supportive, I guess.
Yeah, it's not difficult, is it? Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's something that in my mind, it's always been that way because of the way my mother is that as long as you're not a fascist, Nazi, or racist, you can do whatever you want. And that's the same thing I have to my son, is that you can love whoever you want, you can be whoever you want, you can dress however you want, you can listen to whatever you want, as long as you're not A, useless, B, mean to other people without meaning, or C, do stuff that actually hurts other people, I support you no matter what you are. If you want to be an asexual, non-binary queer, be that. If you want to be a super masculine guy who only likes big booted girls, you be that. I don't care. You can be whoever you want as long as you're nice to other people. And that's the way I want to be towards my son as well. So for me, it was like, okay, then we'll have to figure it out.
What's he like when you have these conversations? It sounds like he can be just so open and so honest with you, which is wonderful.
He can if you pressure him. It's not like he doesn't come to me and say, "Dad, I think I'm a girl." It's more like when we have our, we drive, when I pick him up after he's been with his mother's, we have a 3-hour drive. During those 3 hours, it gets either the audiobook gets boring, the music gets boring, or I get bored, or he gets bored. So it's usually during those trips that we can actually sit and talk. Because when we're at home, he's either playing Overwatch or Fortnite or whatever he's playing, or being out with friends or eating or sleeping, which every teenager does. But when we're in the car, he's kind of like he's locked in place. Now I can get whatever I want from him because he actually has to be there. But he's not pressured into saying anything. It's just that I try to ask leading questions after knowing him now that intensely for now 10 years. I know that when he's quiet, he's usually brewing on some kind of thought that needs to be ventilated in some way. So it's usually during our long trips that I can ask him leading questions that get him to start talking. And that's when he's open and honest.
Yeah. And I think when you're in the car as well, you're not, you have to keep your eyes on the road, right? So you're not making eye contact with each other, which I think makes it so much easier.
I have a feeling that my son is very non-confrontational. What's wrong? He won't answer you. And therefore, I taught him one of my favorite things, which is when I have a deep conversation with somebody or a deep thought with somebody or a deep discussion, I always say, "Misunderstand me correctly, please." And that usually clears things up, because if they misunderstand me, they misunderstand me, but then they can ask, "What did you actually mean?" So misunderstand me correctly is a wonderful term to use with kids.
You've had the conversation with the school. Your mum has picked up your son. You've had the conversation with the police. You've had the conversation with child protection. And now you go to your mum's to see your son and to pick him up and take him home.
I went to my mum. Or my mum and dad's, and I can't remember what we talked about, but we tried to just play it cool. He didn't want to talk at that time at all, so it was like we tried to sit down, have a normal dinner, tried. I can't remember in detail what happened, but it was like I remember me hugging him for a bit longer than he would like, I guess. But that was important for me to just make him understand that I'm here. I know that something bad happened. You don't want to talk about it, but I'm here. If you want to talk, if you need something, I am here. So the week after, we decided in order to, number one, try and put him more at ease, we decided that I would drive him to school and my mom would pick him up from school. And then he would stay at my mother's until I got from work. Just to show him that if he needed us, we were there. Either me, my mom, or my dad. And I also had a close friend and her son, which was also always on standby, so that if, for example, something happened, he could give them a call and they would run and pick him up from school, which is awesome.
And you mentioned when we spoke that you had no idea that anything had happened, but then looking back at how his behaviour had changed over the last 3 years, you could spot signs that something wasn't right. What were those behaviors?
One of the things that happened is that suddenly he was really, really conscious about his body. Because it was like, well, Dad, no, you. I thought that it was him getting his hormones, but looking back, it was a bit too early. But it was like he started to cover up more. He wouldn't let me see him naked. He would always be kind of protective that if he was changing, he would close the door, which he hadn't done before. He started to stay more indoors suddenly, because he was kind of the kid that if it wasn't raining, he was outside all the time. And then suddenly it went from being outside all the time to being inside all the time. And suddenly stopped playing with two buddies who lived quite close by, and only started to play with his now best friend, which is a girl. But like, he also started to say, I want to move. I want to go away. I want to be more with my mom. I don't want to live here anymore. Stuff like that. For me, that was kind of like, when he started talking about those things, I kind of felt like, okay, this is natural. You've now lived with me for about 6-7 years. It's natural for you to now start thinking about, should I move back to mom? In 3 years, I will start another school. Could I then move to my mother's to start that another secondary school? But looking back on it, like, the timeline seems too suspicious to not see the correlation between what happened and his reactions. I had 4 months where I was constantly second-guessing every single decision. Everything I've ever done in regards to him, everything that I should have caught on to, everything that I should have picked up on, all the signs that are there that probably aren't signs at all. So that was a couple of months that was really hard. Super bad nightmares. For about a month, I slept about 2 hours every night. And then I slept another 3 hours on the couch after coming home from work, because I was exhausted after not sleeping more than two hours a night because of nightmares. But when he actually said one time that this is not your fault, you cannot do anything about it, you couldn't have known. And I was like, yes, I understand everything you say, but it's like, it's the... I hope that every parent would have the same thoughts that I had. Like, I should have spoke this. I feel like I dropped the ball in regards to my kid because I didn't pick up on a lot of the hints or signs or anything that he maybe left behind. But I'm not sure if he ever did.
You had a very painful 4 months. How did your relationship with your son, how was that impacted by the revelation? Did you see any changes in his behaviour and in his health?
He relaxed.
Really?
Yep. When I reacted the way I reacted and kind of like showed him that no matter what happens, I'm here, I think that kind of like in his mind put him at ease. That no matter what he did, no matter if it's shameful or not in your own mind, Dad is there. It doesn't matter if it's, I have been molested, which is not his fault, he still feels shame. And I can understand that you feel shame, but then it's like important that he knows that I don't judge him for what has happened, because it's not his fault. And I think that actually calmed him down and made him more open in regards to what's going on. Because he knows that no matter what he says, no matter what he does, no matter what happens, I am there. He's not going to be met with any judgment from me. Because there's no reason to judge him for anything. He's a kid. He's not an adult.
Do you talk to him, or does he talk to you about those feelings of shame or feelings of anxiety or depression or anger?
he was angry. He was angry that he let it happen. And as I told him when he told me, it was like, well, it's not about you letting it happen. If a older person or stronger person does something, it's not something you let happen. It's something that they force onto you. So that's the extent that we have talked about those stuff, I hope. And in due time that he talks and is a bit more open about what happened and how he's feeling about that exact thing.
But in the meantime, all you can do is what you're doing, which is letting him know that you're there for him, whatever happens. When he does want to talk, you'll be there and you're being supportive and you're listening. I imagine that there are going to be some people listening who are also parents who are enduring the worst thing that can happen to a parent, which is finding out that their child has been hurt in this way. What would you say to them?
I'm not sure how reassuring my words will be, but number one, calm everything down. Just be calm and ensure that you spend time with your kid, but don't push it. Don't push anything. Let them take their time. Just be there, be calm, and for your own sake, talk to somebody. If you have a friend that you can absolutely just call and say, shut up, I want to empty my heart and mind, just shut up and listen. Do that. If you don't have that, call a crisis hotline to just empty yourself, because bottling everything up will not help you or your kid. So if I have two friends that I know that I can be 140% honest with, if you have one of those, tell everything, even your darkest secrets, like me having nightmares about my kid killing himself, coming home and finding him hanging from the stairs, for example. If you can tell your friends that, tell them that, because then you will have it out of your system. It's better to have it out than keep it in.
Mm. Did you turn to any group therapies or anything like that, or is your son not there at all yet?
Right after everything happened, I did make a list for him that he still has in his room of all the both mental hotlines, suicide hotlines, teenage hotlines that are anonymous and free, but no group therapy, no nothing. I think he's still a bit afraid of getting judged by strangers, which is completely understandable.
And while dealing with the fallout from the assaults, life goes on. His son is growing up, and he has to keep up with the regular parenting stuff that everyone has to do, like talking about body image.
My kid, he wanted to start swimming, and me being a larger bloke didn't actually have the self-confidence of, yes, let's go and go into shorts and bathe with 150 strangers. But then him wanting to do that and then having the thought of how disappointed would he be if he heard his father say, no, I can't because I don't like how I look. When you're trying to transpose to them that how you look is mostly important for yourself. Yes, you get dopamine releases and everything when other people tell you that you look good, but you have to be pleased with yourself in order for other people to actually see who you are. Being a single dad has made me said, fuck it, a whole bunch of time, like, fuck my insecurity, I have to do this because my son has to be taught that this is how you should be. at the same time that are trying to be honest with him and saying that this is not easy.
How and when did your son tell you he was gay?
Easter 2 years ago. We were, he had been at his mother's, and he requested that we all three eat dinner together, which is very seldom that he does. It's like, if he asks it, then it's something really super serious. So I said, okay, let's go here and have dinner when your mom comes so that I can pick you up. Yeah. He then, during dinner, got really super, you know that when you can look at somebody and say, you're nervous, you're waiting to tell us something. And then he said, Mom, Dad, I'm gay. And I was like, okay, good for you that you know. And then 2 months ago, he actually asked me, Dad, when did you know I was gay? Were you surprised when I came out? And I said, no. Because every fiber in my body has, since he was five, told me he's gay. Because it's been like he has, it's just his way of being that is like, okay, either you're hyper feminine or you're gay. Whichever it is completely fine. And when he said, he was like, yeah, that sounds about right. Right after everything. So then I said that, okay, do you want to go to Pride? Yes. Cool. Then let's go to Pride and you be Pride as Punch. And he was. Thankfully, he was.
Good. It's not every dad who'd take his 13-year-old son to Pride.
No. I don't think there's every dad who gets hit on from the Bear and Cub Club.
Oh, actually, you are a prime candidate.
Yeah.
He's going to have to get used to that. How did that feel for him? Was he proud?
He didn't catch on that they were trying to pick me up, which was, for me, a bit of a relief.
Daddy, who are those nice men in the leather shorts? They're just nice men, darling.
We talked for over 2 hours. He took the camera outside and he chain-smoked, looking over the lake. I felt so privileged that he'd been so raw with me. I'd made it clear to him that we could stop at any point, that we'd cut anything he didn't want to include in the episode, and I wouldn't even air it if he changed his mind at any point. Still, how did he feel after sharing this story?
I'm feeling great.
Yeah? Thank you so much for talking to me and for being so open and honest.
My pleasure. Hopefully this will give you something and it will give other people something as well.
Wow, what an incredible family. And what generosity and what resilience in sharing that story with me and with us. If you're feeling a bit vulnerable after listening to this episode, please call the Samaritans on 116123 to talk through how you're feeling. That's what they're there for. You're not wasting anybody's time. They want to hear from you. And you can also search the Survivors Trust and Rape Crisis for support following sexual assault. If you know someone who you think would like to hear Rob's story, please do share. And as always, you can drop any comments on myshitpod on Twitter or myshittherapist@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and take your meds.